Air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. This is Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim, and
Thor Erickson.
All right, folks, we're going to have an interesting program for you this morning here at Laguna Roundtable. We're going to be hopefully having two of the three school board candidates here, Howard Hills and Jan Vickers. Peggy Wolf was not able to make it this morning, so we're going to put them on individually rather than in a forum format. That's easy for me to say, and it is. And we're going to see how that's going to work out today. And in between that, we will have a little bit of politics. We'll talk a little bit about the debate on Wednesday night because Thor just is eager as pie to comment on Donald Trump. We'll also be talking about some of the DNC dirty tricks. And like we said, we'll spend hopefully about 40 minutes with Laguna Beach Unified School District candidates. And don't forget, folks, tomorrow night, the KX935 Forum live here on the program. 6 to 8 p.m., Billy Freed will host the 6 to 7 hour, and I will be hosting the 7 to 8 hour, asking all of our city council candidates questions about what's going on and what they can do for Laguna. So please send your questions in to lagunaroundtable@gmail.com for any questions you want asked for tomorrow night. But right now, let's dive into the national politics and, of course, the presidential election that has everybody occupied in front of their television sets at all times, or some places probably thoroughly disgusted and hiding in the backs of the room, cringing, waiting for the days to be over as they count down to, I believe we're at 16 days down to the election. So, Righty Thor, what was your take on the debate on Wednesday night? And did I call you Righty Thor? Lefty Thor, sorry.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
There you go again.
What was your take on the debate on Wednesday night?
Well, obviously, the lead was Donald Trump refusing to indicate that he would accept the results of the election. And everything that he's been doing to sow doubt into, you know, the integrity of this election, which is really unfortunate. It would, I think, be, I'd say, I'd be remiss to say that Donald Trump didn't absorb some of the immediate feedback after the debate because, you know, he went on to the Al Smith dinner, I think the night after, or was it the day after, it was shortly thereafter, and basically stuck to the same script. You know, it's one thing to advocate for your views and your positions and to try to sell yourself to the American voters. But I think Barack Obama had it right when he told Donald Trump to basically stop whining and go out and get the votes if indeed he can run.
Well,
those
you know
policies.
What? I will say one thing. When it comes to whining, Barack Obama is an expert in the issue. So
yeah.
I doubt that he was right, but he is an expert when it comes to whining.
But let me tell you one thing, though, that I really captured, I think, the essence of the contradiction of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Aside from the headline, there was this interchange or exchange between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton over his use of Chinese steel in his project.
Yes, remember it.
And Donald Trump, in his reply back to Hillary Clinton, basically told her, well, make it impossible for me to do that. In other words, please regulate me. When was the last time you heard a Republican candidate for president advocating for more regulations on business?
I don't know, Teddy Roosevelt maybe?
Right. So it's quite interesting that he was essentially saying it's your fault for not regulating me. That's why I had to use the Chinese.
Now, because you have an R next to your name doesn't necessarily make you a Republican. But, yes, you are correct on that point. But was that relation to the steel? I thought that was a relation into – didn't he also have a similar comment about the taxes and what he paid and the number of deductions he took? Didn't he say something to her about you were in Congress, you were in the Senate, why didn't you fix those regulations? And if you didn't – think I should be taking that many deductions or having that much of a write-off?
Yeah, actually, but I think that was in the previous debate.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, my bad. Okay.
But you're right. There is this undercurrent that supposedly Donald
There's
Trump...
There's these Trump things that just flash all over the place for me. I mean, I don't necessarily put them in the
right
time frame.
So basically the common denominator here is if Donald Trump gets caught doing something, it's somebody else's fault for not doing enough to prevent him from doing it.
Well, first of all, I don't think that's really true. Let's go back to the point you made earlier about which was you obviously got your very well fed your Media Matters talking points on that, on the election part. CNN and MSNBC were going just crazy over that after the election, where he said he wouldn't necessarily honor the results of the election.
Oh, it wasn't just those media outlets.
Oh, all, Fox commented on
all outlets, yes.
But all media. All liberal media. All liberal-leaning media outlets.
All media.
Like the Clinton News Network and all of them. Because, okay, so did John Kerry accept the results based upon the election night in 2000?
He conceded, didn't he?
I mean, not John Kerry. I mean, Al Gore, sorry.
Well, Al Gore, you know, he gets a few reports.
The answer is no, he didn't accept the results.
No, but he eventually he did concede. And when he did concede in December.
2 months later.
Well.
Or 8 weeks later.
You know, there are provisions for automatic recounts that's supposed to take the pressure off of candidates to essentially be forced into situations like this. I think at the time, and I was actually in Florida in 2000. I was one of those voters.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So at the time, Al Gore didn't have all the information. He did
Al Gore
call,
never has all the information.
He did call George W. Bush to offer his concession, but then he called back to retract that call, which is kind of weird situation. It speaks doesn't speak highly of Al Gore's staff.
Not many things do speak highly of Al Gore.
No, but I think ultimately in December, when the Supreme Court made its ruling in Bush v. Gore, what the Supreme Court did is essentially it stopped the recount. There was a recount that was mandated by the Florida Supreme Court that would have counted ballots that would have been affected by undervotes and maybe even overvotes in some situations where it was clear what the voters' intent was as far as what they were who they were voting for. The standards were not uniform in the state of Florida, and the Supreme Court seized on this, the U.S. Supreme Court seized on this, as a violation of George W. Bush's equal protection rights, if you will, for the inconsistent standards. However, the problem probably was one that Al Gore instigated by selecting just a few counties. When the statewide recount was issued, there was a process in place, and it was supposed to essentially provide some assurance for the voters of the state of Florida that in the process of the recount, they could actually come to an understanding on the standards and then provide confidence in the election. Supreme Court stopped that. To Al Gore, so he went and conceded when he could have just basically said, well, this election it's been stolen from me, and good luck, you know, with your next president. He could have said that, and he didn't. He actually made it very clear that he wasn't questioning the results of the election. He wasn't questioning the authority of the Supreme Court. And he basically allowed for George W. Bush to ascend to the presidency without, you know, having this cloud.
Okay, but the point was, but still, I talked to liberals who still say the election was stolen. He was the improper president.
Well, yeah.
They were doing they were doing whatever you want to call about legitimacy long before anyone ever, before Hillary's campaign started.
But you asked about Al Gore.
Campaign in 2000. Correct.
Yeah.
But the point is, amongst Democrats, there was still the belief, the concern, that Bush was not a legitimate president, that they had stolen the election.
Well, that's right.
So there wasn't a lot of, you say that Gore stepped aside and said, okay, I accept this.
Right.
The Democrats in the party did, and Democrats amongst America did.
Oh, it wasn't just Democrats. No, independent media actually continued with their requests for information. They actually did public records requests for ballots to do their own independent counts. And McClatchley, I think, was one of the first to do this. And they basically came to the conclusion, had the recount not been stopped, Al Gore would have won. So Al Gore didn't come back and seize on those.
That's something I've never heard.
Well, I know, but you don't get your news from outside of the, you know, Fox bubble, so that's understandable.
That's actually very untrue.
All right, but it was
and the Fox bubble is a lot smaller.
There were analyses done after the fact. It wasn't by Democrats. Certainly, if you want to call it, the tendencies of the media, that's fine. But there were media organizations involved in the effort to determine what the recount outcome would have been, and the results basically of those investigations tend to indicate that Al Gore would have won. Now, Al Gore didn't come back and say to the media after seeing those reports, oh, see, here what the media are saying, I would have won, therefore you should have, elected me. That's not something you could expect from a person like Al Gore who has integrity, but from Donald Trump, you look at a person like that, you just try to imagine how Donald Trump would have
reacted. Al Gore, integrity? I'm not really sure.
Just try to imagine how Donald Trump would have reacted if after the election, reports come out that there were some irregularities in your favorite place, Philadelphia.
It'll be all over the Trump
Chicago
News Network.
Right, it would. And what's he going to do with that? He's just basically going to run on it, and he's going to sow doubt into the outcome of the election, sell commercials, sell books. It's just maybe part
I'm
of
I'm guessing when the Trump News Network starts, Megyn Kelly's probably not going to be offered a job there. What do you think?
I don't think so, but, you know, her contract is coming up at Fox, right? it's unclear what's going to happen with Fox, you know, with Roger Ailes being gone.
Yes. I believe also someone else's contract – either Hannity, I mean, I think two of the three of the primetime group, I believe, are up. I believe Megyn's is, and I also believe that either Hannity's or O'Reilly's is. I don't remember which one. I think it might be O'Reilly's.
Well, this was my beef with the third debate as well. I didn't think it was appropriate to legitimize Fox News, but now that Roger Ailes is actually gone, it's probably okay.
Legitimize, wow.
If Chris Wallace decides to start towing, even though a lot of his questions had a conservative spin to it, it was, you know.
Well, at least he wasn't out there trying to debate him like Martha Raddatch was in the second debate.
She was just trying to correct him.
She was trying to debate Trump.
No, Trump wouldn't stick to the facts.
Oh, yeah, you mean correct him like Candy Crowley tried to correct Mitt Romney when she was wrong and Mitt Romney.
No, she was right. And so was Martha Raddatch. In fact, it was Anderson Cooper. Donald Trump said, we need to talk about the emails. They just finished talking about the emails. You know, this is a person who also has a short attention span. It's not anyone you want anywhere near any the levers of power.
Then you got Hillary Clinton, and that's far scarier than Crooked Hillary is better than Crooked Hillary is far scarier than anybody else. That's for sure.
Well,
it's funny. I always joked about if Trump was elected, he'd put a big gold T on the top of the White House, whereas Hillary would just sell it out to the highest bidder and then basically collect the money and put in the Clinton Foundation as a charitable donation. But talking about the DNC and their ethical problems, DNC dirty tricks, the WikiLeaks documents that have come out have revealed lots of different things from John Podesta's hacked email account. But one of the largest, probably the most important ones is, it was also part of the Veritas project. You shouldn't necessarily just say the WikiLeaks emails. The Veritas project also was shining quite a bit of a light on the process of DNC dirty tricks. Now, I remember back in the Nixon election, or back in 72, before Nixon had gotten into trouble, that one of the first problems that they ran into was an ethical violation because they caught somebody, and I think it was, Daniel Gergowitz, but that's not the right name, was sending pizzas to the campaign headquarters of George McGovern. And that was one of the first ethical violations of the 72 election long before the Watergate process broke into. So we've got people that are sending pizzas as a joke to the headquarters. And now we've got people who are sending fake political demonstrators to try to rile up people, to try to create fights, to try to they shut down the Trump session in Chicago, if you remember back in March, because of the DNC protesters. Now, of course, when I brought this up before, you've all claimed this is fake. This is all alt-right-wing conspiracies, fanatical craziness, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that people have been fired, people have had to leave the campaign and leave the DNC, pretty much justifies and verifies this actual information. Lefty Thor, what's your take on this?
The operative word there is fired, right, and left the campaign. You see, the Democratic Party doesn't condone activities like
sure
you
they
just
do.
Described.
They the condone Republic, them until they get caught.
No. And before we get to that, The issue here is whether there's some kind of organization, to sort of confuse voters, if you will.
Well, no, there's mislead them, lie, fake.
Yeah. Last time I checked, the only advertisements that were sent out in battleground states to say that you can now vote for Hillary Clinton online, you don't have to vote, you know, on election day. I've only seen that come from Republican candidates. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. But, you know, just yesterday at a farmer's market in Alexandria, Virginia.
I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton online. I wouldn't vote for her.
You're talking about tricks. Yesterday in Alexandria, Virginia, farmer's market, you have a somebody who is there to express his political support for Donald Trump, wearing a Trump-Pence shirt, holding up a sign. There with her, Russia, China. It's a picture of Hillary. Russia, by the way, Russia is with Hillary. China, Iran, Libya, ISIS. And you know what? He is actually brandishing a weapon. He's an open carry supporter of Donald Trump, and he's holding up that sign. freaked out a lot of these farmers market folks who basically went to Facebook, and it starts basically going down from there. Well, you see, a lot of Republicans like to brandish their guns and, you know, express their support for their Second Amendment rights.
Anything illegal about what they're doing?
Well, the question is, when you start doing things like that, do you think about maybe the potential outcome that you might concern some people with kids, some parents, even on the election day when people show up like this?
Only concern would be is if the guy was not safely doing it, and you point out to your kids, see, guys, when you go out there with your guns, that's not the way to properly carry them, and if the guy wasn't carrying them right. Gun safety is important, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because as Hillary says, babies commit suicide with guns or something along those lines. I don't remember what she said.
Jim, at the end of the day, the Democrats want more people to come out and vote. They don't want any restrictions on people's ability to...
No, the Democrats want to win. That's what the end of the day is, bottom line.
People who have a right to vote should be able to vote. Republicans don't want people to vote. They don't win elections that day. I told you about Paul Weyrich, that was basically the whole mantra of Republican governance, is it depends on people not voting.
And that's nice for you to believe. Back to the Democratic dirty tricks in Chicago. They actually shut down a Trump rally through the dirty tricks of the DNC.
Well, they shut down a hate rally? You know, Donald Trump just gave, his
speech. You sound like the people on Facebook that are debating whether any Donald Trump post should be allowed.
Because this wasn't
Facebook considers them hate speech because they don't toe the line.
No, this wasn't the one where he was talking about his first 100 days, that he's going to sue all of those women.
No, back in March, the big Trump rally that got shut down because of all of the protesters that were brought in to create havoc, and they basically created like a brawl in the middle of first inside the arena, and then they moved it outside. Where they were, and they were people that were documented by the liberals, were by the DNC, were paid to be agitators to go in there and try to create fights and violence, and they could say, look at all these crazy
violence?
Trump people.
No, violence came from the lectern when had Donald Trump saying, "Knock the person's eyes out or whatever, knock him out."
Actually, that happened afterwards.
I will pay your legal fees if you punch them. You know, when you have a candidate for president who's actually advocating violence, you've got a problem.
Well, he was advocating violence. Oh, boy. Anything that doesn't fit to the political correctness is considered hate speech. By the way, you're talking about people voting, okay? Let's throw a little reminder in there, a little public service announcement. California, the deadline to vote in the state of California is what day, Thor?
It is tomorrow.
Midnight tomorrow, 24th October. So, folks, before you go listen to the Laguna Round, to the Laguna City Council Forum at 6 o'clock, either you can do it online or you can do it wherever there's voter registration people, or you could do it at the voter registrar's office in Santa Ana, California, for those of you that are within the local sound of my voice. Otherwise, go online to the California Secretary of State's office. Google Alex Padilla, illegal alien. No, Alex Padilla, Secretary of State, and you can get access to register to vote by midnight tomorrow night, and then you'll be able to vote because contrary to what you want to believe, I believe all people should be registered to vote. And if you don't vote, you don't have a right to complain in the process.
That is very commendable, Jim. And if you're in Santa Ana to register to vote tomorrow, you should also be able to vote early, at least at the election office.
I'm not sure if you can do it when you actually register. Maybe you can, don't know. But otherwise, yes, you can go to the county registrar and vote early. Or, of course, you can always get a vote by mail /absentee ballot and vote that way also. And there are deadlines on those. I do not know what they are, but I think the deadline to request one is probably, I believe it is next Monday also. Not next Monday, the 24th, next Monday, the 31st, Halloween. So for a spooky day, you can go out there and have a spooktacular Halloween and get an absentee ballot while you're at it. But they probably won't be handing them out in bags of candy unless you're in a very Democratic district.
Right.
But the Democratic district, they hand them out. They're already pre-voted for Hillary because that's just the way Democrats help the voter process.
Right. And then I just, as a public service announcement to the Trump supporters, the election day is actually November 8th. It's not November 28th, which is what Donald Trump, I think, has said to some people in his rallies. The election
probably misspoke, like Hillary and the truth about the emails.
I've never seen a presidential candidate so committed to suppressing his own vote.
Yes. Thank you very much. All right. Okay, let's see. What do we have going on? As we promised, we've got some of the Laguna Beach School Board candidates coming in here. And I think we are going to have Jan Vickers come in here in a couple of minutes and talk to us. Let's play a little bit of music. And why don't we'll play a little bit of "Be True to Your School" by the Beach Boys in honor of the school board candidates. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, and we'll let you know where we are.
When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says this school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Hey, take it away. Get
so
be free
your school. For football and track, I'm proud to wear it now. When I cruise around the other parts of the town, I got my decal and badge. So be true to your school. On the football game, and I'll be ready to fight. We're gonna smash it now. My girl will be working on her pom-poms now, and she'll be yelling tonight. So be true to your school.
Folks, that was Be True to Your School by the Beach Boys. And as I said, did this in honor of the Laguna Beach School Board election, which we'll be having on the same day as the presidential election here in Laguna. And don't forget, remember, we just talked about it. Tomorrow, November or October 24th, is the final day to register for the vote, either by absentee ballot or by in-person voting. But make sure you get that taken care of. Go to the Secretary of State's office, Alex Padilla, or to the Orange County Registrar office, and you can get a you can register to vote that way. All right, we have with us Ms. Jan Vickers. Jan Vickers is one of the three candidates for the Laguna Beach School Board. She is a 26-year veteran of the Laguna Beach School Board. And Lefty Thor, why don't you go ahead and start off the first question with our guest?
All right, fair enough. And still, again, about the Lefty thing, Jim. Cut it out. All right, so the particular question is, as you can probably surmise from what we were discussing here today, we have obviously acute political discussions. And one thing that's always struck me, having gone through schools myself, is how much emphasis a school board and an administration, basically of a school district, puts in civic education to make sure that students have at least a decent understanding of politics. How do you feel about that? How students should be informed about politics and the world around them?
I believe, well, first of all, thank you for letting us come on and give people an opportunity to hear some more about us. I believe that we have incorporated that. It changes as far as the name of a course. Long ago, my sister actually had a civics class in high school. I'm the youngest in the family. When I got there, I had a government class. But the content, I would say, is the same. The interest is always, we have government and an economics class for at our high school. It doesn't start just with that class at the high school. I think it's incorporated throughout the years in various ways and discussions that classroom teachers would have with their students or projects that they would do. Certainly now we are interested in having our students be much more internationalized. That came a lot with the computer age, with the internet age, because students are much more aware internationally than they used to be. And so that's part of starting elementary education. But I believe as far as civics, we had a great opportunity last year. We had one of our parents, Kathleen Fay, who did a pilot project for the 4th District PTA and made a real attempt to go on campus. She didn't go on campus, but they registered students to vote. So they made the students very aware of the responsibility to vote, the obligation, in my opinion, the obligation to vote, and they took the registration forms under the campus and facilitated that. It was so successful that the 4th District decided to push that out into other high schools.
So, Ms. Vickers, or Jan, one of the questions talking about the internationalization, what is your take on Proposition 58 and the modifications of Prop 227 that it would invoke as far as English-only and English-language teaching within the schools? And what sort of a issue is this within Laguna and Laguna Beach schools?
I'm not sure that it's an issue in Laguna right now. I do know that some years ago we were looking at doing dual immersion, and I believe it's La Palma School down south was doing dual immersion. We had some people that were transferring out of our district to put their children in a dual immersion program so that they would be educated in both English and Spanish. That put the brakes on that here for there were probably other reasons. It's been a while back. But obviously then we needed to do what the state mandates in that sense. But there are people that are definitely interested in having their students go through school learning both languages.
And one of the comments you made at the last forum, I think you indicated that it's very important for Laguna Beach graduates to do well outside of Laguna Beach. And so my question specifically is about Common Core and any other efforts, if you will, that are intended to raise standards for everyone. And how do you see the district essentially participating in those standards as they are evolved?
Well, we have been participating in the standards, and I, as I stated at the forum, I think that it was well-intended to call them Common Core, but I think it was misinterpreted because it was it hit a lot of people as being common, being average. Common was to be unified across the nation so that students, if they move, because our people in this country are very mobile. People move from state to state. We have new students come in here every year. From all over, not only from this country, but from internationally. They move to this community for a variety of reasons. So I think that it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we participate in that effort to make sure that students have an equal footing when they leave high school or even when they transfer within the grade levels. And it is important for them to be successful after school. We began our work here because at that time it was Nancy Hubbell, and Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, but in 2010. That's when we began the work on, and now we call them California State Standards because that's the term that's being used in California. And I think it's important for us to be aware of any state or federal mandates and to uphold those. But the standards are not the curriculum. The curriculum is set in this district and is particular to what our experts decide is best way to get those standards taught to the students.
One of the amendments or one of the ballot initiatives this year on the ballot in Laguna is a proposition for medical marijuana in Laguna. Now, while it's not necessarily a school board issue, the whole concept of drugs and is whether or not it is or isn't a problem in the schools is relevant in either access to marijuana in addition to the state initiative that is going to be possibly legalizing marijuana. What is your take on the local initiative as far as medical marijuana in Laguna and what effects would you see that happening or having possibly have passed upon the Laguna Beach School District and the students?
Well, the school district was interested in working with the city previously. When there was a dispensary downtown, it was in the location where Shirley's Bagels is, mm-hmm. and then there was another place over on 3rd Street where the marijuana was dispensed, and there was concern because it was visible and perhaps accessible to students that were walking home from school or down in the downtown area. So we, in conjunction with the city, they had an ordinance that restricted anywhere in town where that dispensary could be and where that clinic could be. And it was maybe in a couple locations because it took into effect all the areas that you would not want it near where children would be, which would include what this initiative does not, preschools, parks. And what happened this time is that this voter initiative, because I did clarify this with Bob Whalen since he was on the board at that time, that it would supersede that because it would be a state initiative and it would supersede the local ordinance. So the school district, we had parents come and speak to us at a board meeting. At the next board meeting, we had it on as a discussion item, and all five board members took a position in opposition to KK because of the safety of student issue and the concern for the health and well-being of students that crosses over from being just a city issue to including a school issue where we're concerned for the welfare of students. At that same meeting, we had parents speak. At the next meeting, there was some concern that that wasn't strong enough, so we brought it back as an action item and voted on basically the same thing that all five of us had said.
Okay, and follow up, and then also, do you have an opinion or do you have a position on the state marijuana initiative? I believe it's Prop 61. It's the different
64.
Number.
64.
64, thank you.
At this point, I haven't decided. I mean, it's not clear-cut to me. It seems that I haven't studied the initiative. My understanding is that there are some flaws in the initiative.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to end my question where I began in terms of political involvement, because Jim and I were fighting here over whether there is intimidation going on in the election. And I'm just wondering if you're noticing any of that going on with the students who become more politically active as they register to vote, you know, I guess if they're seniors. And if they take an interest in the election, are you seeing any problems that could arise in the district as far as establishing ground rules for how students should express themselves? Another corollary to that is, how do you explain Donald Trump without appearing partisan?
Well, that doesn't really relate to our school board election. That's why I could not explain that. I'm not sure what you mean by intimidation, and I'm not sure that I've seen any adverse effect on students. From my position, I'm hoping with the new superintendent, as he has expressed interest in it also, that we have a more participatory student board member. And I've advocated for before, give the student board member a straw vote. That happens in some districts. We had that. I have experienced that. In fact, one of our, I think he's now a captain in the fire department, Oppie Weiner was one of our student board reps. And Ron Chilcott was a board member. One of his sons, Ed Chilcott, was a student board rep. And they were very involved, and they stayed for our whole meeting, and they certainly at times would hold our feet to the fire. We had a board rep during a difficult financial time, Shane Lodolt, who asked terrific questions. And I really would like to get back to that. At this point, we get more of a report of school activities, and I'm hoping that we can return to a time where the students are more involved with our meetings and we hear more from them.
That sounds great. I think the point that Thor was trying to make was that there is this mythology floating around through liberal news sources that there is this I don't know what you call it, traumatic effect that Donald Trump's speeches and words and comments have on children, and they're claiming that all of these teachers are seeing all these children coming into school like shell shocked from the terrible effects of Donald Trump. But I think he's kind of going a little bit overboard and buying into
no, it's not that. Not myth. No, there was an elementary school in the East Coast somewhere that basically had a base debates where they do play roles of candidates, and the teacher couldn't find it in her heart to have somebody play Donald Trump, so she canceled the whole thing.
Because
the experimentation with civics failed.
That's a little bit different, and I haven't heard any reports of that specifically, of any teachers having concern with students acting inappropriately. But we definitely, that behavior would not be acceptable in our classrooms. So if teachers were to have those discussions, and I would assume that they are, because especially at the middle school and high school level, because students are really exposed to what is really inappropriate and rude behavior, and that you can have discussions. And I think it was maybe when Teresa Dawn was here. She was here as superintendent for 9 years, and we really took a course on being nicer to each other as board members, and it was really respectfully disagree. You can disagree all you want, and you can hold your own position, but you always need to be respectful.
Fair enough. We talked earlier about the medical marijuana initiative. Back in 1987, you were part of a recall because of a controversial vote over the reinstatement of the school's football coach after a drug charge. What can you tell us about that and the situation around that?
That would probably take another 20 minutes by itself. It's 29 years ago, and I believe that the community as a whole, or has moved past that. I mean, I basically, until it was recently brought up again, hadn't been brought up for a number of years. What I can tell you about it, at the underlying issue, is that at that time, the school district did not have a policy concerning any staff members, any employees, as far as a person who was seeking treatment for an addiction issue. We had that in place for students. If students sought assistance, they were not put out of the system. They were supported and counseled and helped. And so there were many meetings and a lot of collaboration with health experts to decide that we needed to offer that to our employees and our staff members as well, that we would do the same as we did for students. We would be supportive. We would not automatically have them leave the school system.
Though I'm just kind of curious what kind of a message that sends to students about the use of drugs and being convicted of it and then go ahead and being reinstated as somebody who's supposed to be a role model, especially someone like a football coach, or a lot of certainly the players look up to, and maybe even some of the students look up to, is somebody who has had this problem and then is reinstated into their job and faces no punishment per se of their, you know, of their activities or their actions. Is that something from a leadership perspective that is good to be promoted, or how do you take that?
Well, that was a difficult part of that issue at that time. And as I said, this is a complicated issue because it was a decision that was brought forth from the superintendent at that time. And after we had met with the person who was in charge of the recovery program that the coach was in. And I think that actually, being 29 years ago, I'm not sure what the result of that was. When a person is, like anything we see in our local police logs, at that time, that is an allegation. And I can't honestly tell you the end result of that legal case, because often when a person goes into treatment, that affects the outcome of the legal case. But as far as we went out as board members and met with parent groups, PTAs, community groups to discuss what the reason was behind that. As far as an example for children, there was no support of the drug involvement. There was support of treatment and recovery. And let me just add to that I had a son on the football team at that time, and it had a huge impact as far as the negative of using drugs. It was a huge impact.
So, you know, actually, I was more interested in a part of your question I think you were going into, which is related to what Jan said. It's 29 years ago. How have the attitudes changed toward drug addiction and drug treatment over the last 29 years as it impacts not just the students but the staff, as you pointed out? Have things improved as far as empathy or acknowledgement, recognition?
That's not necessarily say improved, let's say changed, but yes.
I would say the factor of understanding and empathy has improved. I think as general, I can't speak for the greater country, but there is much more understanding of the issue of addiction and the physiological effects of addiction, so that good people get into this situation. It doesn't mean that they are not a good person, but they are fighting an issue that's a physical issue, and they need help with that. I do believe there's a much greater understanding than there was 29 years ago, and I think it's also much more in the open. I think you see many more recovery groups, obviously, when you see what cities are dealing with recovery homes.
What do you see as the one or two largest challenges to the Laguna Beach School District currently and going forward over the next, say, five to seven years?
I think one of our biggest challenges is always meeting the needs of all students. That is what our job is. Our job is always to make our decisions that relate to what is best for the students. But public education is a challenge. Private schools select their students. Public education, all students who come are welcomed, accepted, and it's incumbent upon us to meet their needs. In this district, we are attempt to let each student realize their potential in whatever area that may be. That's a huge job, and it involves the entire spectrum of students, and it involves their interests in the direction that they want to go, so that when they leave high school, they're prepared. They're prepared for going on to college. They're prepared for a career. They're prepared to go into the workforce at that point, if that's what they choose. And there is a lot of diversity in the school, not what people commonly think of as diversity, but just the wide range of abilities and talents and like I said, it's a huge challenge just to do that. On top of that, one of the biggest to me is the finances of the district, and to make sure that we continue to be prudent. We are, they now call it locally funded, but we begin as basic aid. And so it's our local money. We get very, very little money, some from the federal government regarding special education, not nearly enough to cover the mandates. But it's on, so we need to save prudently so that we can address the needs for the future. Everything we do here, we are responsible for funding it.
All right. We're just about out of time. Why don't you give us 30, 45 seconds on why the citizens of Laguna should vote for you for the school board?
I've served the district well. I spend a lot of time preparing for meetings so that I can make the best decisions. That involves a lot of study of all the issues and reading everything that we get, which is a lot of material. If you approve a contract, you need to have read that contract. I believe that the historic perspective that I bring to the district is an added benefit to the district. I have heard that from administrators when new administrators come in, because it's difficult often to catch up on the background. And I do, actually I've always liked history as a subject, but I think history is important. I think experience is beneficial. It takes a while to learn what it is all about to be a board member. And I believe that I've had positive feedback on that I'm thoughtful and prepared, and that it is a benefit to the school board to have me there.
All right. Jan Vicker, thank you for coming in, school board member and candidate for Laguna Beach School Board. Next up, we're going to have Howard Hills in, and we're going to pick up with Howard as soon as we get him seated and in place there on the spot. So, Thorny, did you have a comment?
Just check your mic.
Oh, I was not there speaking. Sorry. We have Howard Hills coming in next.
Thank
Jen.
You.
Jen, thank you. Yes, sorry. Thank you very much. Sorry about this. This is the way we have to get everybody in and out of here. We don't trying to give everyone the most amount of time on the air here. We're both trying to give you both about 20 minutes. So, okay, we have settling in right now, Howard Hills. And again, I want to thank Jan Vickers for coming in. Mike might have been a little bit dead there and might have been picked up through Thor's on the background. Howard, I'm going to start off with the same question I was ending with Jan. What do you see as the one or two largest issues affecting the Laguna Beach School Board and the students and the citizens of Laguna?
Well, I think that the schools are performing at a very high rate. If you compare them to other schools, districts in the county, in the state, and I think the teachers are doing their jobs. I think that the students are doing their jobs. I think parents are doing their jobs. I think taxpayers are doing their jobs. I think that one of the concerns I have is if you look at national studies on, the traits of high-performing school boards and low-performing school boards, I think we're not performing as well in our school governance as we should. And, what people don't realize and seem to understand, national studies show you can have high-performing schools, high-achieving schools, and a low-performing school board. And when that occurs, what happens is, if you improve the performance of the school board and acquire those traits of high-performing school boards, it causes the even good schools to become better. And that's what my campaign is all about, is saying, we've got great schools here in Laguna Beach, but if we had a more high-performing school board that had the traits of high-performing school boards and it was governing more effectively, our schools would be even better. And I think that if you look at personnel policy, if you look at budget policy, if you look at fiscal practices, if you look at curriculum development, if you look at community relations and all these areas, our school board is not very user-friendly. And it won't be that difficult. I really look forward, if I get elected, I think we as a school board, working with the other members of the school board, I think in 6 months or 6 months to a year, we could have a much more high-performing school board. Because, those issues, curriculum development, personnel, fiscal practices, budget policies, community relations, those affect the quality of life in our schools and in our families directly. And if we enhance that, we'll enhance the overall experience and happiness of parents, teachers and students, and that's what a school board should be doing. I'll say the last thing I'll say on this in response to that question is, I think it's important to remember, it's great to have PTA people on the school board. It's great to have people that come up through PTA or former educators. You know, when I was in high school here, we had a PTA mom on the board, and she was great. And we had a former teacher, and she was great. But we also had a dentist, a lawyer, and a locksmith, you know, somebody from the Chamber of Commerce. And I think if you look at American public education, our tradition of public education in America, you really want diversity on the school board. You don't want one, you know, sort of, you know, one sort of profile of, you know, who can be on the school board. One thing I'd like to do is open, you know, I'd like to expand the pool of people that are out here in the community that feel like they can run for school board. That's one of the reasons I'm running. And there's a lot of young people, parents, and one of the things that we can do if we improve that governance function is we can educate a broader spectrum of young parents about what a school board is, what school governance is all about, because school boards do not educate, they govern the education process. Education is too important to be left to school boards, but governance is too important to be left for educators. So those are some of the ideas and principles I bring to bear in my campaign here.
Great. Thor?
Howard, welcome. Thanks. Is a good understanding of the Bible indispensable for the development of an educated citizenry?
Well, that's a heck of an interesting question, since we're talking about secular schools here, and we're talking about secular education in America, and certainly the study of the Bible is a part of the Western tradition of classical education. I'm a little bit curious as to why you would ask me that question. I think that if you go to any university or college, public or private, in America right now, if you take a humanities course or a literature course, you're going to be encountering the great ideas of Western thought, hopefully. And certainly, whether you read Shakespeare or whether you read Nathaniel Hawthorne or whether you read Dostoevsky or whether you read Balzac or whoever, I happen to be a James Fenimore Cooper fan, but you're going to be encountering our Judeo-Christian tradition. So beyond that response, I don't know exactly what would be the efficacy of that question.
Well, actually, the question is targeting your political activity, and the question is related to whether the voters here have any reason to believe that your political activities might have any bearing on how you would govern yourself on the school board.
Well, you know, it's funny because I knew that's what was behind the question, so I'm glad by asking you a question I was able to get you to reveal that that was really your motive. I really don't know what you're talking about. It's funny, though, because I was going door to door. I've knocked on over 3,500 doors in this community since late July, and I've had a lot of time listening to what people think about the schools. In North Laguna, I had one interesting encounter. This one lady, I talked to her for about 20 minutes, and she said, yeah, well, you know, somebody came by here the other day and asked me to put a sign in my yard for the other candidate, and I wasn't quite sure. And then I asked her, you know, about the other candidates, and she said that you, Howard, were some kind of a religious fanatic. And I thought that was kind of interesting that somebody would have said that to her. And your question sort of relates to the same issue of what is the role of religion or politics or ideology in the school board candidacy of Howard Hills? I think it's a very biased question because this is the situation. These are nonpartisan offices. School board is not a political, there's no political primary, in case you didn't notice that. To be a candidate for school board, you don't have to engage in a party primary like you do for partisan offices. This is a nonpartisan office for a secular education system. I have spent my lifetime as a civil rights lawyer advocating separation of church and state according to the Constitution, and I have spent my life as an attorney standing up for freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, freedom of thought. And so I don't know where you would be coming from, Thor, thinking that you would ask me a question like that when I didn't hear you ask that question to Jan Vickers. So I don't know what your particular problem is, but I'd like to talk about the issues in this campaign because I think this is kind of an unproductive line of questioning.
It came from the political the platform of the GOP, basically.
And okay, but it's
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, okay.
I don't know what planet you're on if you're asking me to take accountability for something that the Republican Party does. I'm here as a candidate in this community for a nonpartisan office.
But you don't take a position on Common Core.
What's that?
You don't take a position on Common Core, according to the last candidate's session. You basically did not take a position.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, seriously. The other two candidates have come out in support of Common Core, and you take no position.
Well, no, that's not true that I've taken no position.
What is your position?
Common Core is a set of curriculum standards that's been adopted at the federal and state level. And right now, the city of Laguna Beach, the school district in Laguna Beach, is still in the process of coming to terms with what that means for the city of Laguna Beach. What I said at the candidates forum, which you've mischaracterized, is that I think we've had a problem here in Laguna Beach because what we should have done, instead of having the school board just lock, stock, and barrel, embrace the Common Core standards, and basically, as Jan Vickers put it at the forum, commit to imposing the standards without having a presuppositionalist discussion about what the standards are and what they mean. Because if you really understand Common Core, what you understand is that it's not something that can be just it can't just be imposed from top down. It's something, and what my position on Common Core, so to answer your question, my position on Common Core is this. We need to take ownership of Common Core at the local level, exercising in the tradition of public education, local control. We need to build Common Core and build curriculum and figure out how to integrate those standards into the curriculum that we have and that our teachers have developed through their professional careers. And we need to figure out what there is in Common Core standards that we can use to improve our curriculum. And we need to build new curriculum from the bottom up. And what we did here in this town, which was really, I think, what I objected to, you know, other school districts around here, they had open forums where they had people that liked the Common Core to come in and present their views, and they had people who opposed it to come in. And our school board and Jan Vickers at the candidate forum, it came out of her own lips. She said they decided that having pro and con discussion would be counterproductive, that since they were committed to doing it, they just wanted everybody to focus on doing it and getting it done and implementing it, and that it was inappropriate. And I think that actually increased political resistance to Common Core in this community. For example, we had Professor Milgram, who was appointed by President Obama to be the math authentication member of the president's own authentication board for Common Core. And he was former chairman of math at Stanford University. And he, in the end, decided that Common Core had been, after he worked on it for President Obama for a long time, he decided that it had been hijacked at the end by lobbyists and that he could not endorse it. So he offered to come down here for free to talk about the strengths of Common Core and about the weaknesses of Common Core in the math area. Now, excuse me, I just want to finish this. The school board refused to allow him to participate in an open discussion here in the Laguna Beach, sponsored by the school district, and instead they hired a lobbyist for Common Core for $3,500 a day for 12 days, $42,000, and he came down and he basically did indoctrination sessions. So my position on Common Core is that going forward, we need to invite teachers, parents, students, members of the community together to talk about how we're doing on Common Core.
So your position is different from Dana Rohrabacher's, which is to get the government out of education.
Hey, listen, Jim,
and to
if this guy wants to talk about
the Common
Dana Rohrabacher
Core.
And politics,
no,
I'm running for a nonpartisan office, and he's trying to make everything partisan.
He's got a point.
I've got a lot of things
he's
I'd like to talk about.
He's running for a nonpartisan office.
You may be running for a nonpartisan office, but you are very connected here with Dana Rohrabacher, who has a very specific issue
and
on Common Core.
And how am I connected to Dana Rohrabacher?
Well, look, you... You certainly you give him money, and
do I get a question?
No, you get a question, Jim. I just
are you
wanted
doing
to say
talking about Republican politics when a candidate's here for a nonpartisan office. I'm not here as a Republican.
Are you going to be diminishing your profile as a Republican in your term in office?
What I do in my private life and in my political activities is none of your business.
But what exactly?
What have you ever done? I've been a Peace Corps volunteer. I've been a civil rights lawyer in Appalachia. I fought for the emancipation of colonized people all over the world. What makes me a Republican? What makes me a Democrat? I've been a Democrat. I've been an independent. I've been a Republican. You obviously have some kind of partisan hang up here that you aren't able to handle or manage.
Maybe we should be calling him Lefty Thor.
I don't know.
I didn't hear you asking Jan Vickers about her partisan political involvement. You're out to lunch, buddy. There's a lot of stuff that I'd like to discuss here that's important.
Well,
has to do with the school.
We only got a couple minutes.
Let me say this then. You know, you talked about student government. That's the kind of thing that we should be talking about. You know, the fact of the matter is they don't have student government at Laguna Beach High School right now, at least not compared to what it was. When I was at Laguna Beach High School, in our student government, we recruited and supported and helped elect the first female student body president in the history of Laguna Beach High School. We had student-initiated curriculum. We went around and researched. You talk about Common Core. We had students going out all over the county researching curriculum at other high schools and bringing it back, and we ran our own student-initiated courses at the school. Right now, I don't know if you saw my letter to the editor in the paper.
Okay, Howard, let me ask a question that we asked Jan Vickers. What is your take on the medical marijuana initiative and the effects you think that it would have possibly on the students and the school board and their ability to educate students?
Well, this goes back to the subject of, you know, what kind of traits of governance our school board exhibits. You know, we've had a situation for the last several years here where you've had superintendents and people on the staff of the school district going up to Sacramento and taking positions on legislation in the state legislature without any knowledge or much less approval by the board. And, you know, if you look at this situation right now, we have the PTA in this town and the school board, to some extent the PTAs have taken positions in some of the state ballot initiatives, but the school board and the PTAs have been very reluctant to take positions on this local ballot initiative. You're referring to KK?
Yes.
Yeah. And the fact is the city council had a good model of governance when it adopted a resolution, and it put out mailers that have gone out to the public informing them of the city's position. And what the school board did, and frankly other school board candidates did, was they dragged their feet on this until by the time they finally got around to doing something. You know, there were school board, this issue was brought up on the agenda at school board meetings in August, September, twice in September, and the school board waited until October to finally take a position, and they're not doing anything like the city government's doing of putting out a mailers or anything to educate. If it's important enough for them to take a position, then it's important enough for them to have a public communication strategy to communicate their position to the voters. But they didn't do that, and it's that kind of, you know, just make that comparison. Look how the city handled its governance role on the issue of KK, and how the school board handled its governance role on the issue of Measure KK. The bottom line is the school board should have had agility and dealt with the issue in August, and if it made a decision one way or the other, it should have had a public communications strategy. And its failure to do so is typical of how it handles not only issues like KK, but again, going back to my original statement before we got sidetracked on all this political nonsense, when you're looking at curriculum development, when you're looking at community relations, when you're looking at budget and fiscal practices, a low-performing model of governance that the school board's had for the last decade doesn't serve the school district as well as a more high-performing model. And if I get on the board, if I get elected, I'm really looking forward to working with the other board members because I've got a set of skills that's not currently represented on the board in the governance area, and I think I can help them when they figure out what they want to do. I think I can help them using my skills that I had. You know, Jan Vickers says she has all this history to contribute. Well, I have some governance skills that I have to contribute that I think could help all of the board members when they figure out what they want to do to act more independently and to act with confidence so they're not so defensive about their record.
All right, folks, unfortunately, we are out of time. Laguna Beach School Board candidate Howard Hills, thank you for coming in. Folks, tomorrow, Laguna Beach City Council Forum, 6 p.m. here at KX935. This has been Laguna Roundtable, and we will see you folks next week.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX935.
Napoleon, are you coming to bed?
Not tonight, Josephine. I have an headache. What is that infernal racket?
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Put down your hairdryers and surrender in the name of the British Empire!
The British Hair Company has now relocated to 750 South Coast Highway and taken over management of Paris Salon. The British Hair Company. Passion, energy and excellence through education. 949-497-8345.
God save the Queen!
Hi, I'm Peter Asher and this is your full English breakfast. Sausages, baked beans, fried bread, and great music. KX93.5.
Are you all City Comfy Bowl 2 square on your body? Then I'll begin.